Earth at Risk, the Social Justice and Sustainability Conference, will be held next weekend, November 22nd and 23rd at the San Francisco Palace of Fine Arts Theater. And this looks like a place everyone needs to be. Speakers at this star-studded event include Vandana Shiva, Alice Walker, Derek Jensen, Chief Kaleen Sisk, Dar Jamil, and my three guests today, Sabah Malik, Yuli Chan, and Cherry Smiley. Earth at Risk is organized by the Fertile Ground Institute. Sabah Malik is a board member of Fertile Ground. She's a political activist who has organized on issues of racism, peak oil, and anti-civilization resistance for many years. The course of her life changed in the 1990s when she visited the remote communities of the Hunza Valley in Pakistan and lived with land-based peoples engaged in sustainable living practices. Originally from London, she's a trained herbal medicine practitioner and identifies as a radical feminist. Yahoo! Sabah Malik, thanks for being here in the studio with me today. Tell us first about the Fertile Ground Institute.
Fertile Ground was started back in 2008, I believe. I wasn't a board member at that time. I came on later. But the original founders wanted to create an organization that would address the different crises that we find ourselves at this point in our human history facing. So not just ecological collapse, but all the social injustices that the conference Earth at Risk will be talking about. This Earth at Risk is the third event of its kind. The very first one was in 2010, and that was held at San Francisco State University. The second one was in 2012, and that was at Berkeley University. And so this is the third, and it's going to be the biggest yet. It's actually 2 days. The first two were only 1 day. We try to take all of the different crises that we see in the world today and show how they're connected and how many of them have the same root cause and how the interplay between them is like the feedback loops that we talk about in climate change. It just makes things worse. And we wanted to have an event that addressed those different problems, all these different problems, in a very truthful and unflinching way, and to encourage resistance of every kind on every level. Because when there is so much wrong, the only good thing about that is that you can pick your battle and decide to fight.
Yeah, I'm going to want to talk a little more about what that resistance might look like in a little while. But I wanted to ask about something in your bio that I just read. One of the issues you've organized on is anti-civilization resistance. What does that mean?
Civilization itself started around the advent of agriculture, which is anything from 6,000 to 8,000 years ago. And that's when we as humans moved from a hunter-gathering, land-based style of living to an agriculturalist style of living, which meant that we started to live in communities larger than the land base could actually support. So that when we started to practice agriculture, one of the first things we did was we spoiled the soil, because the minute you put a plow to the soil, you start to erode it. And once we became settled in one place as humans in communities, that meant that we had denuded the land base that we were living on of the things that we needed. So we had to go out to get other people's land, other people's resources, to bring them back. Before agriculture, it's not that humans didn't assert territoriality where they were, but you found very quickly that you couldn't live in the same place if you overshot your carrying capacity, because you couldn't feed people. But once we started to practice agriculture, we started to find we had something called a surplus. So that's when the first divisions of rich and poor started to happen. Those people who had more had power over those who had less. It's the beginning of police forces, military, because when you have a surplus, you have to have someone to protect it. It's also the beginning of women taking a domestic role and not having as much power as men, because now they needed, for agriculture, you need people to farm the land. And so people themselves become a commodity, if you like, or a human resource. So women's reproductive capacity also became an economic tool. And that's why I link certainly most of the crises that we see today to what I call civilization, which is people living in numbers so large that they require the routine importation of resources from other places.
All of the talks and workshops at this Earth at Risk conference look really fantastic. But the second day, Sunday, sounds particularly exciting to me, which is good because that's also the only day that I can go. There are a number of panels on that day, Sunday the 23rd, focusing on gender issues as they relate to other issues crucial to our survival, like racism, capitalism, and militarism. One panel is called Confronting Misogyny. Two of the panelists join us now by phone. Yuli Chan is a first-generation Chinese-Canadian originally from Venezuela. Based in Vancouver, British Columbia, she's worked extensively with social justice organizations for the last 10 years on health inequalities, fighting patriarchy, racism, and poverty. She began as an organizer with the Vancouver Bus Riders Union, focusing on public transit and environmental justice. She then co-founded the Alliance for People's Health, a collective of health workers and students organizing around health and quality of life for working class people. Presently, she is an active member of the Asian Women's Coalition Ending Prostitution, working to challenge the normalization of human trafficking and prostitution. And Cherry Smiley is an emerging leader among Aboriginal women in Canada and an internationally recognized speaker on gender equality issues. She's an artist and educator, a volunteer with Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter. She formerly worked with the Aboriginal Women's Action Network. Earlier this year, she exhibited Revolution Songs, an art installation focused on the experiences of prostituted women and women affected by prostitution, and she co-founded Indigenous Women Against the Sex Industry, a volunteer group that works to educate the public about prostitution as an expression of colonialism and male violence. Cherry Smiley lives on Coast Salish territories in Vancouver and holds a master's degree in fine arts. Cherry, just randomly, because I don't know either of you, I'm going to start with you. What does confronting misogyny mean to you?
Well, I come from the Tuklatmukh, and that's the Thompson Nation from the interior of British Columbia here in Western Canada, and also from the Diné or Navajo Nation from the southwestern United States. So, I mean, for me, confronting misogyny, it's my life's work, basically. So it's the little things, right? You know, turning on the TV or, you know, walking down the street and seeing advertising on the sides of buses. You know, it can be kind of as small as that to the more obvious expressions of misogyny that we see, in especially in prostitution and pornography. So for me, those are two of the areas that I focus on particularly. And for me, those are the most obvious expressions of misogyny, but also the intersections between race and class and colonialism as well. So for me, confronting misogyny means really questioning the normalization of both prostitution and pornography in the rape culture that we live in, right? Where when we're often, you know, discussing prostitution or pornography, the role of men and their roles as pimps and as buyers is usually kind of glossed over or ignored or hidden. So it's really important in the work that both myself and Yuli do to really expose that inherent woman-hating that happens in that transaction of paid sex.
And Yuli Chan, as Cherry mentioned, you are also working right now on trafficking and prostitution, though you started out working on economic issues and went on to healthcare. So how do you see the fight against sex work as connected to environmental justice, economic justice, and health justice?
Sure. If I can start by challenging the use of the term sex work, that's something that our organization, and I know Sherry as well, avoid using, just because, you know, that term actually conceals the true nature of prostitution, which is the violence and exploitive nature within prostitution and the sex industry. So we prefer to use prostitution or women in prostitution. But in terms of the linkages, for me personally, I've always kind of seen my work as challenging the structural violence that stems from capitalism. My first exposure into anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist politics was through understanding the exploitation of people through class and through poverty, and understanding how that intersects with racism, with sexism, and just, you know, talking to people and seeing how issues of exploitation and oppression are so inherent and pervasive amongst working class people. And then focusing my work more on understanding how patriarchy affects women's lives and how prostitution is actually one of those issues that really undermines the solidarity between men and women, between the working class, and between our struggles and the left. And so I am now focusing my attention to this issue and working with other radical feminists and pushing the left to deepen our analysis and challenging the normalization, like Sherry was explaining, around prostitution and trafficking.
And I just like to add in there quickly that how important it is that we make that linkage, especially when we're looking at the prostitution of Aboriginal women and girls, that we make that connection between social justice and environmental justice. How important it is that we're looking at both the rape of our women and girls and the rape of our land as really kind of two sides of the same issue. If we want our women and girls to have freedom and safety and all of these things that we're entitled to, we need to make sure that we have access to our lands, because in our lands, that's who we are. That's our culture. That's our languages. That's so integral to our ability not just to survive, but to live.
I'd like to know more about sort of how prostitution and trafficking specifically affect Aboriginal women, if you can talk about that a little.
Sure. So the issue of prostitution is, for me, it's the issue that is of greatest importance for Aboriginal women and girls right now. And I'm sure it's true across America, but it's definitely true across Canada. So if you were to go into any, you know, larger city, urban center in Canada, the women that you would see on the street are disproportionately Aboriginal women and girls. So Aboriginal women and girls are overrepresented in prostitution. And we also enter into prostitution generally at younger ages. So I have a friend of mine who's said before, it's very hard to find an Aboriginal woman in Canada who either hasn't been prostituted herself or who doesn't have a friend or family member who's been in prostitution. And this is not obviously because Aboriginal women and girls like to have, you know, engage in prostitution with men more than non-Aboriginal women and girls. This is a direct result of the colonialism and the capitalism, the racism that we have experienced since invasion, since contact, and that we're currently experiencing today. So, you know, we need to be looking at the residential schools, which were schools very similar to the boarding school system in America, where our children were taken. Now we have the foster care system, which is, again, Aboriginal children are overrepresented in that system. Aboriginal women and men, but particularly Aboriginal women, are overrepresented in the prison system. So Aboriginal girls are the fastest growing prison population in Canada right now. The same applies when we're looking at poverty, drug addiction, male violence against women and girls, suicide, disability, mental health. All of those issues are disproportionately affecting Aboriginal people, and particularly Aboriginal women and girls. So we really need to be looking at the colonial kind of nature of prostitution. And I know from the stories of my grandmother and from the stories from different elders that I've spoken to across the country, that prostitution did not exist in Canada pre-contact. And I'm not sure that this is true for every Aboriginal nation, but for all of the people that I spoke to across Canada so far, I have yet to come across somebody who has to tell me that prostitution existed pre-contact. So we really need to be looking at the fact that prostitution in Canada is a fairly recent injustice, and that it was imposed and has particular and profound consequences for Aboriginal women and girls.
Yuli, you talked about not that you don't, your organization doesn't like to use the term sex work, that you talk about prostitution and trafficking. You know, many feminists have argued that if it weren't for the stigmatization of prostitution, it could be a career like any other. And if it weren't criminalized, then we could take measures to ensure the rights of women in prostitution, and women could choose it or not choose it, and that's what we should be focusing on rather than trying to eliminate sex work. What's your response to that?
Well, I would say that the vast majority of women who are in prostitution are not there by choice. They're there because of the poverty, of the racism and the sexism that they have experienced in their lives. And in Canada, the average age of girls who enter prostitution are between 12 and 14, whereas the average age of men who buy sex are between 35 and 44 years old. So, you know, with those statistics in mind, we really see that this is about male power, male entitlement to women's bodies, and that the people who actually do have a choice in this situation are actually the pimps and the johns.
I think when we focus on the choice of the women to whether or not engage in prostitution, that's taking the attention away from the real question, which is, you know, what type of world do we want to live in? And do we want men to be able to purchase women or not? We don't even have equal pay for equal work, you know, at this point in time. So do we want those who are more privileged to be able to take advantage of those who are less privileged?
And if you don't mind, Kate, I'd like to address one of the points that you brought up, which was there's some feminists who say that this should be a matter of choice for women. I think if you extend that logic to the sweatshop area, for example, it's not a choice. It's a choice made out of necessity. We live in a world where we make choices because of necessity. And most women who are in prostitution are there because of necessity. If they had the education to become a doctor, I don't know, you know, I'm sure there's some women who might choose to be a prostitute, but I think that the numbers would fall quite drastically.
That's Saba Malik, one of the organizers of the Earth at Risk conference, which is coming up this weekend. We're also speaking with Yuli Chan and Sherry Smiley, and they are two of the speakers at the panel called Confronting Misogyny that will be on Sunday. So Saba Malik, you know, a lot of environmental events don't really emphasize feminism. Why do you feel that it's so important to have a strong gender component to the Earth at Risk conference?
Because as Cherry pointed out, ecological devastation is very closely connected with gender inequality. And, you know, the rape culture that we live in, the rape of the land and the rape of women, and the desecration of life-giving land and the desecration of the life-giving nature of women's bodies are deeply and intimately connected. And if we look at when the injustices started, I mean, there's a very good book by a historian called Gerda Lerner, and it talks about the history of patriarchy, which she says took something like 2,500 years to come about in the form that we really understand it today. When we look at the beginnings of agriculture and the devastation of the land, it's also the beginnings of patriarchy and women being considered chattel or property. And that's that they both started together and they fed off each other. So it's an extremely, extremely important connection to make.
You call yourself a radical feminist.
I do.
And that's just so wonderful to even say. What does that mean to you?
Being a radical feminist means, for me, that I see that the culture that I live in is a rape culture. Currently, the rates of rape are, I think there's, in America, it's 1 in 4 women will be sexually assaulted or raped in her lifetime. And I think most people who work in rape crisis centers or work in the industry know that the numbers are far higher because there's so many rapes that go unreported. Would you agree with that, Yuli and Cherry?
Definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, so much of it is unreported and invisibilized too.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, being a radical feminist means that I see that the culture that we currently live in devalues women, objectifies women at every stage, whether it's in jokes, whether it's in advertising, all the way up to, it's a continuum, it's a line on a continuum. So you have everything from slurs, everyday slurs that you hear in the playground, like you throw like a girl, to pornography, sadistic pornography, and the trafficking of women on the other end.
So, you know, Earth at Risk sounds kind of dire. And, you know, which I think kind of reflects the way that a lot of us are feeling nowadays. You know, but do you all believe that we can get back to a more healthy way of living on this Earth?
I absolutely believe that we can return. That's really how I see it. I don't see it as, you know, really any new ideas, but I see it as a reclamation and a return to the ways of living and the teachings and the belief systems that I was very fortunate to have been able to grow up in and be nurtured by my grandmother and by my elders. And if I thought there was no hope, I wouldn't be doing any of this work. I really do this work starting from a place of loving, right? Of loving women, of loving girls, of loving the land. And so I really do think that we can get back. And I know that this conference, Earth at Risk, is so, so important. And I think it's a very good way to get together these really these people that have really great ideas and strategizing and beginning to talk or continuing the conversation really about how we're going to move forward on these issues together. And I think it's a really, really important platform to be able to have these really hard conversations, because they're not, you know, they're not fun, they're not, you know, necessarily enjoyable. The work is hard, but they are important and they are necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely important to maintain hope, as hard as it is, and it is a daily struggle, like Sherry was saying. But you know, I am a part of a group. You know, we're all part of groups of women's groups working together, and that really helps. And I think that ultimately is what's going to bring about change, is that we have to organize ourselves, and that's how we can create a positive vision of what we want to work towards. We certainly need to look to history and take, you know, the important and meaningful pieces and have that carry us to, you know, a more just and peaceful future for all of us. But it's definitely important for me, at least, to be a part of a group that's founded on principles of justice, of equality, and to continuously try to expand our experiences and analysis with each other. And that's definitely one thing that we're really looking towards in terms of this conference, is really building our analysis together.
One of the really important parts of the Earth at Risk conference is that we want to also give people the chance to build collaborative groups or collaborative projects. And so we're going to have something called the Action Hub in the lobby, which the ideas that come from this conference and activists who want to be engaged with one another, or they might belong to separate groups, but they might have, you know, projects that they can collaborate on. We want to see a lot of cross-pollination, because it's going to take people coming together and organizing collectively to face down power. And I think that that's an extremely important part of the piece. There's an interview I heard recently, and I believe it was Kathleen Barry, who said somebody asked her, what can you do as one person? And her response, which was brilliant and simple, was to say, don't be one person.
Hopefully this great conversation has inspired you all to want to check out the Earth at Risk Conference this weekend at the Palace of Fine Arts Theater in San Francisco. Earthatrisk.info is where you can get the schedule and all the information about how to get tickets. I spoke with Saba Malik, a board member of the Fertile Ground Institute, and with Cherry Smiley and Yuli Chan, who will be speaking on the Confronting Misogyny panel. Yuli Chan is a member of Asian Women Coalition Ending Prostitution. Cherry Smiley is a co-founder of Indigenous Women Against the Sex Industry.